Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Line drive, that'll be a base hit. Here comes Ramos, and Matt Williams is going to wave him in. Here's the throw home, not in time. And Flores down to second, and they got him.
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
We are back on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap, and for the first time, officially, not pre-recorded, officially live, we are going to go to the River Islands guest line. We're going to talk to our friend Grant Brisby. You probably read him on The Athletic. You might have read him once upon a time on McCovey Chronicles. Heck, you might have seen him on TV on Giants Outsiders once upon a time. He joins us here. Grant, thank you so much for joining us on The Wrap this morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's a pleasure to be on.
Awesome. So let's get right into what's going on with the Giants. And obviously, Rafael Devers has been the story all week long. And I guess right off the bat, just how when we talk about the Giants the last few years, getting stars was such a grind. The free agents didn't want to come here. It was impossible to get a major bat. But with Devers now on this team, how much does this deal kind of change how we should view the Giants both now and in the near future?
Well, I mean, it's obviously, it's a little bit of a coup compared to, or considering what they've been trying to do over the last few years. I mean, you start with Giancarlo Stanton, you go through Harper, Otani, Judge, you know, all the Correa drama. They've been trying and trying and trying. And, you know, that's the obvious story. But I also think that the idea of a star is a little bit overblown, because when the Giants were rolling and selling out and had the sellout streak, they had Crawford and Belt and Posey. I mean, those are really good players. Those are all stars. But I'm not sure if they're stars. So they just needed better players. The good news is that Devers is a little bit of both. I don't think he has like name brand recognition outside of the Boston area. He's just a really good player, and he's been a really good player for a decade. He's young enough to where you think he's going to continue to hit at least for the next 3, 4, 5 years. That's really what the Giants needed more than star power, because once the wins come, then the fans come, and you know, the superstars are the ones we made along the way. So it's, you know, Crawford doesn't necessarily get any Hall of Fame votes, but he's a star in the Giants' orbit.
Hey, Grant, this is Dan Avone. Really quick, when we talk about Devers, well, why don't you just update us? How long before we see him playing first base?
Well, he was saying when he's ready, he's ready. And that's really the issue here, is I don't think, you know, he's getting paid a lot of money to play baseball. And some people might say he's getting paid a lot of money to embarrass himself if need be. I don't think he wants to embarrass himself. And I don't think that's an unrealistic, when you've accomplished as much as he has, when you've made 3 All-Star games, when you've helped win a World Series, when you've been the faces of a franchise that let other faces of the franchise leave, you get a little bit of say. Like, listen, I don't, that's not necessarily where I feel comfortable right now. You know, I don't know if he's worried that it would bleed over into his hitting, his overall just mindset when playing the game. I don't think it's unrealistic, and I empathize with the argument of that's what the money's for. I mean, you pay me as much as him, I will write, you know, hagiographies about Tommy Lasorda, and I will, you know, describe a secret moonlit dinner with him or something. You pay me that money, I'll write all sorts of things. But with Devers, it's just, you know, when he feels comfortable, he feels comfortable, and that could be a couple weeks, could be a couple months. I don't blame him personally.
Talking to Grant Brisby here on the River Islands guest line, covers the Giants for the Athletic. And Grant, you know, Buster Posey has completely kind of, he's really revamping this Giants team, which is a far cry from what we saw in the most recent regime with Farhan Zaidi, who seemed so risk averse when it came to making big deals. Like, he had to win every single deal here. Whereas Buster, it felt like he's kind of steering into the risk a bit. What do you make of the aggressive nature that Buster took here in making this deal come together?
Yeah, you know, I'm constantly reminded by one of my podcast hosts that the Dodgers, they'll say, if you want to be realistic, if you want to be logical about every free agent, you'll never sign a free agent, right? There has to be some sense of, okay, like, I'm going over the top of what I feel comfortable with, and now the free agent is on our team in the organization. So that's the story of free agency. You have to pay a certain premium to pass the point of what you feel comfortable with. But I will say, you know, now that the new guy's in and things are going a little bit better, it seems like everyone likes to dump on the old guy. But the moves that Buster has made, Justin Verlander, Willie Adames, not necessarily contributing to the total wins on the field, but the biggest difference to me is that sense of, hey, we're going to do something. We trust in you guys. It's getting a sense that someone at the top who's running it is someone who's been in the clubhouse before, won championships before. It might sound like hokum, and it might sound like smoke and mirrors to us, but I do think that the culture of the clubhouse is different in a way that even with Adames struggling, even with Verlander struggling amidst an IL stint, there's something, there's a belief there, a shared belief that, you know, I can't believe I'm this old and talking about intangibles, but here I am. I'm this old and talking about intangibles, and it seems like Buster's bringing a little bit of them to the table.
Yeah, hey, intangibles still matter, Grant. We love those intangibles. And I want to follow up that because you do bring up the culture there, and I'm sure you read the Jeff Passan story that dropped on ESPN yesterday, and he painted a very grim picture of how things were being handled in Boston in terms of the communication there. The situation that Devers is coming into here, is this an organization, do you feel, that is going to be better at communicating with him? Is this a better clubhouse culture, you think, that he's coming into? Just if you could speak more on terms of just how much the organizational structure and culture of the Giants, how is that going to be beneficial for Devers, whereas it was kind of a detriment, so to speak, in Boston?
Yeah, you know, I can't really speak to the situation in Boston without, you know, I haven't talked to any Red Sox players or been around them. So I can't speak to if it's insular, if it's a top-down problem or anything like that. I do know that whatever is leaked out, it doesn't paint the Red Sox in the best picture, because what it feels like is that Devers was a franchise cornerstone for the last front office. The new front office comes in and says, okay, we got this guy under contract, don't necessarily love that contract, whatever, but he's a useful player on our teams. He's a good player. Let's treat him like any other useful good player. Hey, can he go over here when needed? Hey, can he do this? Whereas Devers said, hey, you know, you're the guys that let Betts go and Bogarts go. I'm the guy now. Why are you jerking me around? I get it. Now, I just think the Giants were smart enough to realize an opportunity. And it's very simple to just approach them and say, hey, we've got this idea. What do you think? What do you think, Rafael Devers, three-time All-Star and young superstar? And then he can have an open line of communication with them, as opposed to playing things in the press and sort of these quiet, off-the-record meetings between owner and player, between GM and player, all that stuff. It's just, I don't know if the Giants are going to bring something specific to it that any other team couldn't have, but it's definitely how it needed to happen. It's just a team saying, hey, we think you're Rafael Devers, you know, three-time All-Star. We think you're really good. What do you think? And that's what the Red Sox failed to do, at least from all inside sources.
Hey, Grant, we're coming up on a week since the Devers trade and the team still can't hit. If this continues, can you see Buster Posey making another deal before the trade deadline?
Maybe. I mean, it's certainly possible. This came out of nowhere. I really do think that the prescription for the Giants, now that they have Devers, is just to get the other people going. I mean, Yastrzemski's been on a little bit of a hot streak leading up to last night. Couldn't come through in the ninth inning, but you need to get Jung Hoo Lee hitting again. You need to get Matt Chapman back. You need to get, if Patrick Bailey's not going to hit like an above average catcher, he can at least hit like an average catcher and not someone who you have to bury and pinch hit for in the late innings. There's just a lot of room for improvement on the roster. If there is a spot, if there's a fit at second base to get some sort of veteran, I know they've been waiting for Tyler Fitzgerald to break out and recapture some of that glory from last year. They started Christian Cost twice in a row. Really didn't work out on Friday night, but that's sort of it. They're sort of searching for something else, another way to get offense. And if you look around the diamond, if you're thinking Chapman here and Adamas eventually might get going, and you're thinking Devers at first, and you're poking around and seeing where you have a space to upgrade, it would probably be second base or bust. I mean, unless some other, you know, superstar player becomes available that could justify moving someone like Yastrzemski out of the lineup or justify some other big move, it's got to be second base. I don't know that there's going to be Jose Altuve in his prime or something waiting for the Giants. So that would be the only place I could see it. Otherwise, I think it's Devers or bust and hope for improvements and better health.
Grant Brisby here joining us on the River Islands guest line. See what he has to write about in The Athletic. Wrote a lot of great stuff about Rafael Devers this week. But, Grant, as my co-host Dan just said, you know, the hitting is just not there. And, you know, I was kind of bringing up earlier on the show that when hitters start to struggle, it's not all that dissimilar from football. Like when the Niners defense lets up a touchdown, everybody immediately wants to fire Nick Sorensen. Right now, Pat Burrell is in the crosshairs of a lot of angry Giants fans on Twitter. And as you and I both know, Twitter is absolutely real life. What do you make of just the automatic blaming of the hitting coach for the hitting struggles of the Giants, especially lately with runners in scoring position?
You know, it never made sense to me when I was a starting blogger back in the 2000s. And the more I've gotten into the game and the more I've been in the clubhouse, the more I've been around a little bit, I still don't get it. Like, I don't know what Pat Burrell does. And I'm not saying I don't know what a hitting coach does. I don't know the messages that Burrell is relaying in one-on-one conversations. I don't know what he's seeing and how he's relaying it. That's what a hitting coach does, right? He gets information, he watches someone, he figures out solutions, some tweaks, and then conveys it in a way, and then it's up to the players to implement it. I don't know if he's doing that well, if he's doing it poorly. I mean, you could remember back in the day where the Tigers, like, oh, you know, they got the Giants guy, Eckers, we need all this stuff, and then all of a sudden that guy gets fired, and it's what is a hitting coach is just a proxy for I'm unsatisfied with the offense. So that's not a justification for keeping Burrell on. It's just a knee-jerk approach where I think it's more on the players. I mean, it's more on the players to start hitting. If the information's not getting distilled in a way that's helping them hit, that's certainly something to look into. But I will say this about the Giants offense is that right now league-wide offensive levels are down. The Giants play in one of the toughest pitcher's park, if not the toughest pitcher's park in baseball. Those two things will make a slightly below average offense seem much, much worse. And by park adjusted metrics, the Giants aren't good. They're not great, but they're not, you know, abysmal. They're not ending the list of adjusted OPS or all the fancy stats like they were in maybe, I don't know, 2011, when the offense was really just gasping for air. That's not this team. It looks worse. It feels bad because, you know, every 2-1 game in Oracle Park is just a grind. But that has a lot to do with the league-wide scoring levels. It has to do with the ballpark. And yeah, it has to do with the Giants being a below average offensive team. But I don't think that they are a desperate offensive team, especially now that they have Devers.
Hey, Grant, now that Kyle Harrison's gone, let's just say, and stay with me here, that the Giants are in the playoffs and the playoffs start tomorrow. You got to reduce the rotation. You go Webb, you go Ray. Who's the third starter?
Whew, that's a heck of a question. I mean, Birdsong does look pretty good when he's right. He didn't look so right on Friday night. I would think you go Webb, you go Ray. It wouldn't be Roop. Yeah, I think I would go with Birdsong perhaps, and hope for the best. I think that's going to be the key of the next few months, is that it's going to be more evidence for whomever the Giants would choose, just getting those couple months. Because if you remember back in 2021, at this point in the season, Webb was on the IL and just like some guy, like a sixth starter that you weren't even thinking about. And then it was the second half where Webb just emerged into the pitcher he is today with his magic sinker and assortment of pitches. So I would say right now, maybe Birdsong, but also, I don't know, who's to say?
Luckily, the playoffs don't start tomorrow, though, Grant, so we don't need to answer that question right away. But I agree with you. I do think it would be Birdsong. But there is still a lot of season left. And obviously, you know, Kyle Harrison is no longer on the roster. And he was kind of the sixth man of the five-man rotation, so to speak, when this season began. And you and I, we've been watching Giants baseball enough to know that you need a lot of pitchers on your pitching staff. The last few years, we've seen this team have, you know, Logan Webb, and we're scraping together who knows and what knows to find starting pitching here. But Harrison, he was that first guy to kind of come in this year, like when Justin Verlander got injured. That's what elevated Kyle Harrison back into the rotation. But he's gone now, and there's still a lot of season left, and knock on wood that this doesn't happen. But at some point, a pitcher in the Giants rotation might not be available when that day, or if that day does come. I'm going to say if here and be optimistic. Who is the first pitcher that is brought in to fill that spot? Which Carson is it? Is it a Mason? Which name do you think comes up?
I think it would be boring at first, if only because Carson Wisenhunt isn't on the 40-man roster. They would love to keep that spot open for deadline additions, for any waiver claims they might need. If the moment arises, 40-man roster spots, I mean, they're finite, they're valuable. So you want to delay. It's got to be Wisenhunt just blowing through AAA if you're going to call him up and use him as the emergency starter. And if he's not, if he's just having a good kind of one of those confusing prospect seasons where some nights are better than others, you keep him down as long as it takes. And then you go with someone, and the Giants do have plenty on the 40-man roster. I mean, the Sacramento rotation so overstuffed that Tristan Beck couldn't get in, and he's been, I don't know if he's officially converted for a reliever permanently, but he would be a logical step to come in and give maybe not a full starter's complement, but some bulk innings, 2, 3, 4 innings in the event of an injury. But they, you know, they have plenty of guys on the 40-man roster. Keaton Wynn maybe could be moved to the 60-day aisle to make a spot for Carson Wisenhunt. But there are, I think, 6 additional starting pitchers now, even with Harrison gone, who are on the 60-man roster or 40-man roster. So that would be, it would be someone boring. I think it would be a Carson. It would be, but not Carson Wisenhunt. It wouldn't be the best prospect available. It'd be the most functional, just a guy to make a spot start here and there. If it's Mason Black, if it's Tristan Beck, someone like that.
All right, Grant, you knew we had to go here at some point. What are the chances that Bryce Eldridge comes up with the Giants, and at what part of the year? And then, listen, if Devers is over at first base, can he be the everyday DH?
Yeah, it's a tricky question, but I think right now it's being made a little bit easier for the Giants because Eldridge is struggling in his debut at Sacramento, not struggling so much where you have concerns, but it's not as if he's plowing through the Pacific Coast League. He's still just 20. It's definitely a hit-over-glove profile right now. Most of the reports on him at first base are, wow, this is going to take a little bit of time. The reports when he would play the outfield was nope, and it doesn't seem like that has changed with the Devers trade. So right now they're in the position where I think it's kind of comfortable for everyone, where you get to let the 20-year-old prospect be a 20-year-old prospect. When he hits his way to the majors, he'll be up, whether it's DH, whether it's as the starting first baseman with Devers, the DH. they'll figure that out. I always, it feels like once every 3 weeks, I remind people that when Buster Posey was drafted, there were people online that said, well, what about Pablo Sandoval? He's the catcher of the future. Not quite. And these things have a way of working themselves out. So my guess is that Eldridge doesn't come up at all this year. Not unless he's hitting 400 in Sacramento or you know, 300, which is a ton of power, and they can slot him right in and just expect that power and not worry so much about the defense. But I would be moderately surprised if Eldridge were called up. Moderately, not like, wow, they really blew my mind, but just sort of like, I could see them keeping him down all year.
Grant Brisby here joining us on the River Islands guest line, covers the Giants for The Athletic. A couple more before we get you out of here, Grant. Jung-Hoo Lee, first month of the season, was San Francisco Giants baseball. The hooligans movement was taking over. Everyone loved themselves some Jung-Hoo Lee, and it's been a slow march in the wrong direction really ever since the start of May. He's hitting 185 in the month of June. That was before last night's 0-for-4. I've asked Bob Melvin about this a couple times. He's mentioned that, you know, he sees him kind of pushing and pressing too hard at the plate. I'm just kind of curious when you kind of see Jung-Hoo Lee, and I know you're great at kind of opening up the hood and diving into the deeper numbers there. What are you seeing from Jung-Hoo Lee? Is there a level of concern there, or is this just a hitter in his first full big league season kind of going through the usual adjustments that hitters in that situation go through?
I think both things can be true, where you have a hitter, he's still a young hitter, who is seeing stuff that he's never seen before, right? The KBO doesn't feature this assortment of stuff. When you get a pitcher coming over from the KBO who finds success, it's like Merrill Kelly, right? It's someone who is adept at hitting spots. That's what passes for a top-of-the-rotation pitcher over there. So he's seeing stuff he's never seen before. He's seeing 99 from the left side. He's seeing wipeout breaking balls, and he's still making pretty good contact compared to the rest of the league. He's not swinging and missing as much. He's not chasing as much as the typical hitters in the league. I will say that when you look at his overall game, it's not a ton of power. It's not a ton of walks. What he's going to need to do is hit for average. And when you're an average first hitter, you're going to be subject to all this weirdness with balls in play, with line drives you hit right at guys, with he has that roll over to second base down pat, but that's not all that we're seeing in this slump. He is putting the bat in the ball and getting it to fielders out in the outfield. I think his expected batting average, if you use the nerd stats, is still up there in the 280s, 290s. So it could just be poor luck to some extent. But I think this is just the nature of who he is. He's going to have months where he hits 330 and looks like the reincarnation of Tony Gwynn. He's going to have months where he's hitting 180, and that's just what happens when you put the ball in play. Once you do that, it's a little bit out of your control unless you're hitting it over the fence or hitting it 110 miles per hour. Neither of those are Lee's game, so I think he's just going to be a streaky player from the outside just as he waits for those hits to fall in.
Great stuff there from Grant Brisby of The Athletic. Last one here for you here, Grant. As Giants fans, you know, we're conditioned to seeing this team lose a free agent battle, and then the immediate pivot is, oh, well, they're going to really regret that deal in a few years. The Giants got three guys now, Devers, Chapman, Adames, who are signed to very long deals. So let's play the game. Which one do you think they regret at the end? Who do you think will look the best at the end of their contract? Of those three.
Yeah, I think they'll regret all of them, because that's just the nature of long-term free agent deals. It's very rare where you get to say, I think Buster Posey was a good example, where he signed this, a position that's fraught with peril, and you sign him for a long-term deal, but by the end you're like, hey, wait, don't go, come back. That's pretty rare. So I think they're going to regret all of them. I do think Adames will give them a couple of good years before it really starts to hurt and they start have to wondering about position changes and stuff like that. I don't think the first half of the season is necessarily indicative of his true talent level. I'm not willing to write him off after a rough first month. Chapman has some old player skills, but he also has that defense is going to just give him a chance to be valuable even when he's hitting 200. And you know, as long as he can hit a few home runs and play defense like he has, that's someone you still want in the lineup. And I don't see why he can't do that until he's 35. So of the three, I think Devers would be the one that would age the best just because of his youth. I know people are concerned about his DH profile, but I'll take the youth over that and the raw hitting and just assume that he'll be someone putting up 800 OPS, 850 OPS long into his 30s, as long as he stays healthy. For the most part, though, I don't care about long-term contracts because what you're saying is that, you know, if we have this guy on a long-term contract, well, then in the future when he's not producing, we won't have money to sign the next guy to a long-term contract. And then you're just playing the game again. At some point, you have to have the players for the present and not worry about whether a contract's going to be bad because they're all going to be bad. And if you're saving money for another contract, guess what? That's going to be bad at some point, too. You just have to identify, hey, we've got the pitching right now. We need some sort of cohesion in the lineup and on the roster and play for the present right now. And as of right now, the Giants have three players they're happy to have, even with Adama struggling.
Awesome. We are definitely happy to have you, Grant, joining us here on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Really appreciate it, Grant. Have a great rest of your day. And, yeah, thanks for joining us today.
You got it. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. That was Grant Brisby, covers the Giants for The Athletic. Joining us here on the River Islands guest line, is it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop. A lot to get into there. We'll react a little bit about what Grant said on the other side. But also, again, as we teased a little earlier, the expectations, have they ratcheted up for the Giants this season? Or do you feel like this season the Giants have already accomplished enough to call a success? Love to get your thoughts on that, Dan. Love to go to the lines, and we'll get them those calls in as well. So 888-957-9570 is the number. Have the expectations ratcheted up for the Giants? Plus, who is not in the starting lineup today? You're going to want to hear that on the other side. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Here's Yastrzemski. And this is knocked down. And now it's going to be a tough play, and it can't be made.
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
We are back here on the wrap. Great job, Zach, holding it down behind the glass, man. He's getting better with every week here at 95.7 The Game. We got a caller on the line. We also have a lineup. Mitch is in New Jersey. I'm going to go to Mitch in a minute. Not right now. Not right now, Zach. Don't put him on just yet. Mitch, hang in there. We'll get to you in just a minute. But we do have a lineup. I'm going to pay off this tease because someone is not in the lineup today. Well, obviously, someone is not in the lineup today. You can only have nine guys in a lineup, and there's 13 position players. But your leadoff hitter is going to be Mike Yastrzemski. He'll be in right. Rafael Devers bumped up to the two spot. So Bob Melvin trying to get him some more at-bats. He'll be hitting second as your DH. Elliot Ramos hitting third and left. Willie Adames getting the cleanup spot tonight. Today at short. Big Dom Smith, he will be batting
at
fifth
short?
At first base. Yeah, Adames at short.
Sorry. Oh, I thought you said.
Did I say something else?
No. I missed. Go ahead.
Okay. Dom Smith at first, batting fifth. Batting sixth at third base, Casey Schmidt. Daniel Johnson will be in center field today. Not Jung-Hoo Lee, who again has been going through it at the plate a lot. So my guess is Jung-Hoo just getting a nice day off here to kind of reset his mind a little bit, take the pressure off, stop pressing as much. Tyler Fitzgerald is back in the lineup. So for all the Giants fans out there wringing their hands over Christian Kost, we're going to go back to wringing your hands about Tyler Fitzgerald today. So I like Fitz a lot. I think he's a great guy. I root for him a lot. I caught a foul ball from him last year. And so I very much root for him, and I hope that he is able to find the success that he had last year. That would be great if that could start today. He'll be batting eighth at second. And then Andrew Kisner will be in the squat at catcher and batting ninth. Landon Roop will be on the mound, 4-5, 3.99 ERA, 63 strikeouts on the season. So that's your lineup. Yaz, Devers, Ramos, Adames, Smith, Schmidt, Johnson, Fitz, Kisner, Roop. That is your lineup today. Coming up next, though, without further ado, is one Mitch in New Jersey. Mitch, do you need to see Rafael Devers be the leader on this team? What are the expectations of this Giants team? Or do you have a trade option that you want the Giants to pursue? I'm throwing three questions at you. Pick whichever one you want to respond.
Well, first, I'd like to how you guys doing. Thanks for my call.
Of course.
I think I want to see Devers do well at first, despite the Boston Red Sox, also trained for Josh Naylor from Arizona. He knows how to play left field. He's lost like 15 pounds. He's got 10 stolen bases, so he moves at a 5'11", 235. You need more pop in his lineup. You got to like what they're doing. We're in second place comfortably, and I mean, a bit of a dog fight, I think, I'm hoping.
I don't hate that.
And thanks for taking my call.
I don't hate that idea, Mitch. In-division trades are a little bit difficult. Mitch, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Yeah, no, so I'm assuming if you're wanting the Giants to still make more trades for a bat, are you in the position of the Giants, like this is they have to make the playoffs this year, or do you feel like just with the addition of Devers, is that enough for you to be like, you know what, this team's future is looking pretty good. I'm good with where they're at right now.
I think, but I think to ensure maybe to chase the first place, the Dodgers, you never know. Yeah, but actually, he's not that strong. Definitely not the Central, and Braves are not doing well. Mushroom was looking good for a while. I mean, they've seen the tailspin. Mm-hmm. So I think two of the wild cards definitely come from the National League West.
Two, yeah, I agree with you, Mitch. Thanks for calling in there. That is Mitch in New Jersey, and I kind of go for first place. I mean, hey, why not? I mean, the Giants are still 4.5 back, and as you alluded to earlier in the show, Dan, the Dodgers looks like they are starting to catch fire here. But you look at the wild card standings, Giants currently hold the second wild card spot, 3 games behind the Mets, who the Mets, wow, they are in New York mess mode right now. They have lost 7 straight right now. They are playing Philly this weekend right now. Philly's currently atop the NL East right now. So it's the Mets, the Giants, and then right behind them is the Brewers and Cardinals. They're a game behind the Giants. And then a half a game behind the Brewers and Cardinals is the San Diego Padres. The NL playoff picture gets a little bit murkier after that. Cincinnati Reds, they're 2 games out. I don't see them as a major threat. Arizona Diamondbacks, again, with Josh Naylor, their season has just gone in no way, shape, or form as expected. The offense has not really kind of picked up where it left off last year. The bullpen has been a mess. And then they lost Corbin Burns, their big offseason pitching acquisition. And so that's your National League playoff pitch. Because after that, you look at the Braves and the Nationals, who are just so far out of the picture now that you basically got, you know, 7 teams right now fighting for a wild card spot with, again, Padres, Reds, Diamondbacks all being within 2.5 games of one of those wild card spots. So, yeah, simply put, Dan, is the pressure higher now to make the playoffs for the Giants this year than it was a week ago?
Oh, certainly. Without a doubt. You've got to make the playoffs now that you've got Devers. And I'm with you. There's no evaluating. There's no, well, we'll run it back next year. This is, you live for today, because there's no guarantees that, you know, you're going to get this sort of pitching next year. And so you capitalize on what's, listen, Logan Webb is having a Cy Young type of season. And this bullpen being what it is, you have no idea that your bullpen's going to be able to replicate this next year. And so you go all in and getting a guy like Devers and maybe somebody else so that you can hit and take advantage of what it is that you're starting pitching and your bullpen's been able to do up to this point so that you can get back into the postseason. And baseball, unlike that or the other two major sports, the NBA and the NFL, if you get in, you got a chance. I mean, see Arizona. See, it happens. Washington Nationals. There's a chance you can win the World Series. Just get your ticket punched. And it's all about this year, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, I agree. And Jim Bowden of, I believe he's with The Athletic now. He's been with MLB Network. He's been with ESPN. He's been all over, former general manager. He joined Steinhe and Guru earlier this week. This was on, I believe, Tuesday as well. And he flat out said the expectation is October baseball.
The expectations, without a doubt, to me, are they're going to have to play in October baseball. And I have a lot of confidence that this group is going to play in October baseball. I love the way this team has been built. I love the energy. I love the blend of youth and veterans. Most importantly, I love the pitching staff, and that's going to play. And you've got a president of baseball ops in Buster Posey that really understands how to get hitters out. And his expertise and quiet leadership and light whispers to Pat Bailey and the other catchers are difference makers for the Giants. So I don't look at it as pressure. I look at it as let's enjoy this ride, because this ride is going to take us into October, baby.
There you go. This ride will take us into October. Of course, that was before the last couple games of runners in scoring position and aptitude. But, Dan, again, 2010, 2012, 2014, those teams would go through long stretches, 3-4 weeks at a time, when no one could get that big hit. And at the end of the day, those seasons still ended pretty dang good for the Giants. It's 162 games, Dan. There's lots of ebbs and flows. The Giants are in an offensive ebb. But we know that, as we saw again, I always come back to that Elliot Ramos double against the Padres a couple weeks ago that kicked off that 7-game win streak. When he got that hit, you felt a massive shift in this team's energy. You could feel it through the TV. I wasn't at the game. I was watching on TV. You could feel that energy. You know, when I got to the ballpark later that weekend, when they played the Braves, like, it felt like a completely different team that was taking the field. Now, granted, that team has since faded back away, but you know that team is in there. We know how good these guys are. We know that when Matt Chapman gets back, how that's going to change things. We know that Willy Adames gets hot a lot in the second half. A lot is riding on that coming to fruition in the second half. We know how good Rafael Devers can be. We've seen how many balls he's hit off the Green Monster in Boston. And a ball that's off the Monster in Boston is halfway up the bleachers here at Oracle Park. The potential we know is there. It's just a matter of how much trust and faith you have in this Giants team to seize that potential that you know they can and run with it all the way to October.
Wait, you're going to have to explain that to me. How is a ball off the wall at the Monster halfway up the bleachers in San Francisco?
Well, if it's off the Monster, I mean, the Monster is like, what, 30 feet high or something like that. So if it's bouncing off the top of the wall.
Of top and then of the wall? Okay.
Yeah. So I guess I should be ball. There is a lot of wall, I guess. You're right. A ball off the top of the Green Monster. Because you can sit on the Green Monster. They're seating like 3/4 of the way up. But there's a lot of balls he's hit that just kind of bounced off the Monster right under where people sit. You know, if you're hitting it that high up the wall, more than likely that ball is going to be gone. And or the same thing if you have a ball off the number 3 archway of the Willie Mays wall at Oracle is probably a home run in like Dodger Stadium or something where they have that comically low right field wall out there.
Mickey Mouse ballpark.
Yeah, it is. It's a terrible ballpark and an even worse parking lot. So it's all about how much you believe in these hitters turning it around and figuring it out, and at the same time hoping that the pitching can actually keep picking things up. This team just is, at the end of the day, this team does not feel like it's living up to the potential that we know it can have, which is crazy to say when they're 8 games above 500 and you very much within a playoff spot. But Dan, ever since that 12-4 start to the season, this is a 30-30 team. They are 42-34 now. Ever since that 12-4 start, they are a 500 ball club, which you could look at that as, wow, they've really kind of regressed since that hot start to the season. Or you can look at it as they're keeping their heads above water as best they can right now until they can be a whole team.
They just have to hit. As ridiculous as that sounds and oversimplified.
You're not wrong.
Because at some point, as good as the starting pitching has been, as good as the bullpen has been, there's going to be a regression to the means. And I think you're beginning to see it with Birdsong last night.
Robbie Ray a little bit.
Yeah, if Robbie Ray. And the wheels come off a little bit. Look at that series leading up to the Red Sox against the Guardians, in which they scored a total of 6 runs, 2 runs every single game. Can you imagine essentially telling your pitching staff, hey, listen, you need to keep the opposing team to 1 run or less. Can you do that? We can win you a game.
I mean, that's basically Logan Webb's life. You know? I mean, Logan Webb got that. He gave up that 1 run on Thursday, and you're thinking, well, you screwed this up, Logan. You know the rules. You're not allowed to give up runs. And, of course, Wilmer Flores picks him up in the 7th inning there with that pinch hit double to score 2. But, yeah, that is life as a Giants pitcher.
I think at some point you're going to have to give a pitcher a day off. At some point, Robbie Ray just won't have it. Mm-hmm. Or at some point, as we saw with Birdsong or whomever, even Logan Webb. and you're going to have to outslug somebody, as teams do, and good teams do. Teams actually do score double digits, believe it or not, as ridiculous as
I've
that
I've heard rumors about that, but I didn't believe it to be true.
And you could win a game 9-8 or outslug another baseball team. And so, again, the onus goes back on the offense. And this is this conversation begins and ends with this team at some point. And hopefully Willie or Rafi Devers is going to be the guy to get this thing going and get this train back on track, but they're going to have to hit.
I mean, I do believe I agree with you. Yes, Rafi Devers needs to get it going, obviously, to get these get the lineup going. Willy Adames needs to eventually show up. He has a 5-game on base streak right now, which really does not sound like a lot, but for him, it does. You're really trying to grasp here for positives with Adames, but again, he did get a on base twice last night, scored a couple runs, which that is a productive night that he had last night. So if he could just, you know, keep doing that every single game for the rest of the season, that would
His
be...
His defense is better.
The defense is getting better. I maintain that the defense is a little bit better than the errors indicate. Again, his defense isn't great. He's never going to win a Gold Glove with the Giants, if we're comparing him to what we expect at shortstop defensively with what we saw from Brandon Crawford, what we once saw from Omar Vizquel, what even Richard Relia was an accomplished defensive shortstop. Heck, most Giants fans don't remember this guy, Brian Bocock, who was the opening day shortstop in 2009. Even he was a decent enough, I don't know if that's a drop, but even he was a decent enough shortstop there. So Giants fans are used to seeing plus defense at the six hole. And Tyler Fitzgerald, moments last year, but there's a reason why he's at second base. The guy they need to get going back, though, I think it might be Matt Chapman. And the reason is we asked Bob pregame, you know, what this lineup's going to look like when there'd be more structure to it. And he did bring up Chapman. Here's what he had to say, as I just had it here on my board, and then I lost it because everything is so disorganized here. Here it is.
There's a left-right complement to it all. I'm not 100% sure he's going to be in the three-hole all the time. Once Chapman gets back, it feels like we'll get a little bit deeper and a little bit more balanced. Until then, we're trying to play a hot hand earlier in the lineup, like Yaz leading off now and Jung-Hoo's a little bit down. So early on, we were a little bit more structured in how the lineup went and then had to make some changes, obviously. I still think there's some potentially a more of a balanced lineup and more of a set lineup once Chap gets back.
So Bob was asked that before the game yesterday. The question was basically how Devers is fitting into the lineup right now, and that's where the left component came in. And Bob's talking about that, and he's I kind of expected him to... When he's talking about that, I'm just thinking, like, really? It has to be all incumbent on Matt Chapman's presence in the lineup for this lineup to kind of be structured in a more consistent manner, because when you look at this team, Jung-Hoo Lee is looks like a prototypical leadoff guy. He's a contact-heavy guy. He has speed. Willie Adames, you know, I asked Bob Melvin after the Adames' intro presser, where do you see him in the lineup? And he said, well, I think the number on the back of his jersey is probably a good indication, that number being the number two. You got a great three-hole hitter in Rafi Devers. Elliot Ramos can handle that too if you want to put Devers in the four spot. And then you got Chapman Flores, who could potentially hit behind him. But I don't agree with the notion that you need to have Chapman here right now to keep these guys in the lineup spots that they're currently hitting it. Now, it's Bob's decision. He writes the lineup. He knows more about this game than I do. So I do trust Bob's baseball intellect in this overall situation. But when it comes to the lineup, I would like to see this lineup be more structured right now and then wait for Chapman to come back rather than move guys around the lineup based off who's hitting what and just kind of hodgepodge it together until Chapman gets back, because that's the kind of disorganized life, so to speak, that the Giants were living under the Farhan regime, where every lineup was so matchup based. You didn't know, guys came to the ballpark not knowing where in the lineup they were going to hit on any particular day.
Yeah, I don't know if Melvin is doing it necessarily on the metrics or algorithms and the whatever it is that the computer is spitting out, like Farhan and Kaplan, we're so reliant on in terms of percentages. I think right now for Melvin, they've reached this point of desperation that they're just doing anything so that they can move guys up and down the lineup to get them going. And you're seeing that with Jung-Hoo Lee, who's not in the lineup today, who goes from leadoff spot now down to number seven. And so even Devers now is up at the number two spot. You're just trying to get this thing on. You're just trying to make contact. I don't know if it's necessarily about structure or unstructured. You need some offense. You know, you mentioned something interesting about Willie Adames and his defense. Just to go down the road, and I'm so on board with what Grant was saying earlier that, listen, these long-term contracts, they always turn out poorly. I think I mentioned this. The last two or three or maybe 4 years of a deal,
you're feeling it.
Typically, you're going to eat it. Look at Aaron Judge. I guarantee you, as amazing as he has been, get back to me for a guy who's 6'7 in his late 30s and see how that contract works out with the
New York Yankees. Big body to maintain.
Yeah. So, but for the Yankees, it makes sense if they can get a World Series one of these years, and it justifies itself. With the Giants, when you just think about going down the road, Willy Adames is not necessarily, as you mentioned, a good athlete at shortstop. And so, ideally, he's somebody that you would, in his latter years, move into the DH spot. But then you have another guy who's a long-term player in Rafael Devers, who, when you look at his body type, that is not somebody that you would consider as a position player long-term. Mm. He seems to be the natural DH. So I'm wondering, when we think about these contracts for Giant players that are locked up long-term, where do these guys fit in as far as their contribution on a daily basis?
Well, I do believe Devers at DH for the entire 8 years makes sense. I think the only reason why they want him to play first base is because that allows Wilmer Flores to stay in the lineup more often, and you have to do that because Wilmer has probably been the most dependable Giant this year, which this isn't I'm not trying to take a shot at Wilmer here, but if Wilmer is your most dependable hitter right now, that's not a good thing. But again, Wilmer, he's been coming through all year long because he has one of the best approaches at the plate, if not the best approach at the plate on this team. So they want to get him in the lineup as often as possible, and he's not a very good defensive first baseman either, and Bob admitted that there's going to be some ugly games defensively at first base going forward this season, whether, you know, he mentioned about Rafi Devers playing first, but Wilmer Flores will be an adventure at first base in its own right as well. But yeah, long term, because Flores isn't going to be here forever, Devers is your guy at DH, and that gives me hope that his deal will age the best, because being a DH can extend your career for a very long time. Adames, I think if he is the shortstop for 4 of the 7 years of this deal, I would be amazed. I think he's going to be at second base before he hits the halfway point of this contract. And then Chapman, yeah, he'll be at the hot corner for the entirety of his career. So I think whatever he'll look like defensively there, you could still be a good defensive third baseman even later into your 30s. Scott Rolen, who recently was inducted in the Hall of Fame, he was a plus defender all the way up to the end. So if you have the defensive know-how, you can do it. Even Brandon Crawford at the end, he was still a plus defender. He wasn't the gold glove defender he was in the mid-2010s, but he was still a better-than-average shortstop. And I think Matt Chapman will still be a better-than-average third baseman when his contract comes to an end eventually as well. So, you know, we asked, you know, which of those deals is going to age the worst. Based off what I just said there, it feels like it could be Willy Adames, but that's only because, again, I think it's just Devers and Chapman are set up to age the least poorly in comparison to what we're going to see from Adames. So, and with that, Dan, we've reached the end of the show.
Right,
we
on.
Did it. We did another fun one. This was a lot of fun day. A lot of great conversation today. Thank you to everybody who called in. Big shout out to Risotto and Zach Green behind the glass for holding things down. Thank you to our guest, Grant Brisby, for joining us today. If you missed that interview, you can go back, catch it on YouTube or on the free Odyssey app. Thank you to the Giants for giving us so much content today. And thank you to you, Dan. Really appreciate you coming in and doing these shows with me, flying across the country and talking baseball with
me. I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week as well. And to all those listening, we will see you on the next one.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.